is regular work for the next 12 to 18 months. This is the regular work of the next 12 to 18 months. And someone is going to be leading this effort. And we want to make sure that we're not seen as people who were there but weren't helpful. We need to do the right thing for our communities. And we need to believe that by doing that, the right thing will come our way.
I'm Leslie Walcott, and this is the NCCHCA podcast. Today, we're talking about the role community health centers play in mass testing, which is when a company or business or community partner asks for help testing a lot of people at once. And I will let our guest speaker introduce himself.
Well, I am Brian Toomey. I'm the CEO of Piedmont Health Services. This is our 50th year of operation. It's not what we thought we were going to be doing to celebrate our 50th anniversary, but in many ways it reflects what health centers do, which is you respond to the needs of the community no matter when, where, how, or why.
So why do you think community health centers are good choices to call for help with testing?
So the people, when you look at the outcomes in this country, there's first the general population, then there's the people who are tested, and then the people tested, the ones who are positive, and then of the ones who are positive, the ones who get sick, and then of the ones who get sick, the ones who die. So you go down that spectrum, the places that people will find that are most connected to community with existing relationships, a sense of trust that's already been built in about what we'll do with the results and how we'll help people, community health centers are a natural partner. Because we've seen as being helpful, not someone who's going to try to do surveillance or track people necessarily in a terrible way, but people are there to help and make sure people stay healthy.
Can you walk us through what it looks like when you go do testing at a site where your help has been requested?
So when we go do a community testing site, first, before we get there, I liken it to painting your home, which is it's the prep work that makes all the difference, not the last step, which is the testing or painting of your house. So what we do is when you, in order to do a community-based testing, first you need to get engaged with your partners. You need to know the environment, both the physical environment, the sense of the community, the culture, the language. You need to know the sense of fear or concerns in the community. So you just do an environmental scan on all of the above. And then you need to make sure that you're working with partners that have the same interests at hand, which is to make sure that we're doing this to make sure we fully inform people in the community about what the state that they are of their COVID-19 state, and then how we can help mitigate fears and also help make sure that we do some education to prevent the spread of this terrible disease.
So you're talking not just about the, in the metaphor, when you're painting a house, you're covering things up, you're sealing things off, but you're talking about also laying the kind of social groundwork, the trust groundwork as well.
So absolutely the fat piece, because you have to work. The things happen so fast once you start doing testing, you all need to know how you work together, what you like together, how they'll work, and it starts with a sense of trust. So, the granular details of this ahead of time are everything from whose Wi-Fi we're using, the trusted Wi-Fi, where do people doing the testing park their cars, where would you put PR or media people who want to come do some interviewing. When people are done, where do they pull through? Where do you get lunch? How do you make sure things are done safely? How do you dispose of PPE? What's the hazardous material? Do we have enough drivers to bring the testing, the materials, back and forth to where the labs can process them? The level of detail is large, but when you do with people you've worked with and trust, it's not as onerous.
There are a lot of logistics to consider for testing day, but Brian reminds us that the testing itself is just one part of a larger strategy.
there's three parts. The way we see this is there's three parts to testing. It's the pre-planning, the pre-engagement, the getting ready. There's the testing itself, and then there's the follow-up, okay? The kind of like most exciting, fun, engaging, quickest part of it is the testing itself, okay? Days go by fast. We see lots of people who are so relieved. They're grateful. All those things. It's the pre-work is the work, and then the follow-up work is also the work to make sure that people get the results, and that if you did 512 tests, you got 512 results, and you followed up with 512 people. So testing is exciting, engaging, and meaningful, and you still have to do that kind of like block and tackle work of making sure your pre-work is done as well as your post-work. So I think, so far it's like testing and tracing, right, are the two T's. I think it's three. It's testing, tracing, and teaching. So I think we need to continue to teach everybody about how the disease spread and also how it doesn't spread.
It is clear that there's plenty of pre- and post-work around a testing day, but let's talk about some of the logistics of the day of testing. About how many of your staff are you finding that you're taking to these events?
So we will have, so let's just talk about the last couple we did. We had maybe 10 to 15 at any one time. And then back at our site, we also had someone who would run drive some of the results or the sample specimens back and forth so they can be picked up by LabCorp. And then, so on site, it's actually like the least number. And then afterwards, the other work that's done would be doing the follow-up calls and making sure those things will happen. So let's just take, what we try to do is at least two, if not three lanes, if you will, testing lanes, right? So we have three lanes of cars. This time what we did was we made sure that we had appointments, as many appointments scheduled ahead of time. So that's also why if you publicize this, you know people are going to come because they've put themselves on a schedule. You know, we probably had about a 15% no-show rate, but we had enough people drive in, and also so we would take people to drive up. So all of our slots were filled and we're busy the whole time. But scheduling was helpful. So you do that stuff on the front end, so that takes some staff time. So for each lane that we had probably three support people plus a provider there on site, and we would have providers doing telehealth and being available, so they weren't there, but they were there virtually, and then we had a couple of IT people supporting, so anywhere from 10 to 15 people, depending on the time of day.
Brian makes it sound easy. But we did wonder if Piedmont hit any bumps along the way. What are some of the challenges in doing off-site testing that you've run across in your first two major events?
Well, there's always challenges, right? So how do you, so first we do them outside, okay? So the first challenge is weather. And so each time we've done a outdoor event, it's rained. And so you have to be ready to deal with whatever the weather is outside, whether it's rain, whether it's wind, whether it's humidity. You want to make sure that your staff is covered and protected. You want to make sure your equipment is as well. So we learned quickly how to, because we're all electronic, how we needed to make sure that we had covers for all of our laptops and other kind of electronic devices that we could operate and get information back and forth, and at the same time make sure it was protected and not didn't get wet from the elements or too hot from the elements. You want to make sure you have electricity. You want to make sure you have enough sanitizers outside. You want to make sure you have access to facilities for people for bathroom breaks and those kinds of things. So the logistics on the basic pieces of that starts with weather, and then just the normal things you have. How do you make sure there's food for people, or coffee for people for breaks and how do you make sure things are done in a safe way and all infection control processes are followed through as well. You want to make sure that the PPE, there's just all the details of these things that we take for granted, but it's just part of what you do.
So, Brian, I know that Piedmont has entered into their 50 years of service this year. And I know that you all have endured and seen a lot and have had a lot of challenges. But I was wondering if you could share some insight about COVID present and COVID future for community health centers and healthcare in general.
That was Chris Shank, CEO of the North Carolina Community Health Center Association.
We think that this is forcing us to make changes. That's forcing everybody to make changes. Some of them will be changes that are foisted upon us that won't necessarily be good and helpful long-term. Some of them that have been put upon us that really are forcing us to make some of the changes that will be helpful going forward. So some of those changes going forward is we've learned now how to be incredibly flexible and real team-based care whenever a challenge comes in, so that it's the how can we do this together approach has been a real positive outcome of this. The second thing is we've really learned to work with our neighbors, the community partners, because when these things happen, you forge stronger alliances and relationships with people in your community than you had before. We think that shared states of deprivation tend to create the strongest bonds, and so we think that that's also been something that's happened out of this as well. The static definition of jobs has gone out the window, and so all people doing all things at any one time has been a real change in this piece for us now and going forward. We see technology as being something that will be very helpful, doing some work virtually, making sure that those kinds of things, are done in a safe way. We've learned to think through about barriers are sometimes distance, sometimes they're virtual care, sometimes they're PPE. And we've learned that communication and working with each other is so critical that life previously had been driven a lot by emails and IMs and those things, whereas now they're really forged on the basis of real interpersonal relationships that now you have quick communication either by phone, in person, and or by email, but it's the basis of it is the long-term relationships.
Speaking of long-term relationships, Brian Toomey talks about the kinds of patients and the kinds of relationships they have at Piedmont Health Services.
So our organization last year served just under 50,000 people. Just over half of them were uninsured. We have about 18,000 people who English is a second language. We have about 800 new Americans that we serve, who are refugees from foreign countries, who are proud to be Americans, and we're proud to work with the refugee program. We have an HIV program, a Hep C program. We're proud to be an LGBTQ program. We have just under 100 transgender patients that we serve. We like to make sure that we serve the people that are in their in-between spaces.
Brian had one more thing to say before saying his goodbyes.
We are also proud to be a member of the North Carolina Community Health Center Association and the National Association of Community Health Centers. We're one of 41 colleague organizations in the state, take care of over 500,000 people a year. We're proud to be one of that group, and we're proud to be one of the 1,200 organizations nationally, taking care of over 30 million people, or almost 10% of the entire population of the country. We are proud to be here, and we're looking forward to our next years.